This is Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. In a moment, we'll go to the Iowa State Capitol, where we will hear Governor Terry Branstad give his annual Condition of the State address. He will outline his priorities for the coming year. Broadcast of this speech is made possible by Iowa Public Television. Following the speech this morning, I will talk with Iowa Public Radio's Clay Masters and Chris Larimer, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. We'll get some analysis of the governor's speech and also hear from you. Now we go to Dean Borg at the Capitol.
House, hello, I'm Dean Borg. The Senate President, Pam Yocum, has just introduced Governor Branstad, and we're going to switch right to the lectern for Governor Branstad's Condition of the State address.
Wow, thank you very much. Madam Lieutenant Governor, Madam President, Mr. Speaker, leaders, justices, judges, legislators, elected officials, distinguished guests, family, friends, and fellow Iowans, good morning. I offer a special welcome this morning to new representatives Brian Meyer and Stan Gustafson and new Senator Julian Garrett. I look forward to working with you and all members of this General Assembly. I stand here today honored to be serving as your governor, humbled by the opportunity, and eager to meet the challenges we face. I'm pleased to report on the condition of our state. Over the past year, we've come together as families, communities, and Iowans, putting our differences aside and moving Iowa forward. Because of our hard work last legislative session, Iowa's economy, educational system, and health are moving forward. Iowans have proved time and time again, when working with one another rather than against one another, we can overcome any challenge. For example, the International Olympic Committee last year took action to eliminate wrestling from the Olympics. More than 25,000 people joined us through an online petition to keep Olympic wrestling. The entire Iowa congressional delegation joined us, and more than 30 other governors came together joining me in a letter to the IOC to keep wrestling. And together, we kept wrestling in the Olympics and the Olympic dreams of Iowa wrestlers alive. My friends, Iowa faces another challenge where we can again come together and rally around what's best for our state. The EPA has proposed reducing the level of biofuels outlined in the renewable fuel standard. If this rule is adopted, it would be a devastating setback to the agriculture sector of Iowa's economy. The proposed rule comes at a time when our state continues to implement new pioneering policies encouraging growth and innovation in renewable energy sector. In a partnership with Iowa State University, we launched the Fueling Our Future program last October, which will bring Iowa to the forefront in the use of E30 fuel. This new program is a reflection of the importance of further advancing the renewable fuels industry and how the RFS is helping create important Iowa jobs. The RFS has led to a cleaner environment, opened the markets for Iowa corn and soybeans, and reduced our nation's dependency on foreign oil. Thousands of Americans are coming together now in support of the RFS. We will be holding a public hearing later this month to give Iowans the opportunity to voice their concern about the EPA's proposal. Lieutenant Governor Reynolds and I are pleased that the entire Iowa congressional delegation and Secretary of Agriculture Bill Northey have agreed to co-host this important forum. Today, I call on the General Assembly as one of your first orders of business in a bipartisan passion to pass a resolution in support of maintaining a robust renewable fuel standard. Whether it's our sense of community that saved wrestling or collaboration in support of agriculture and renewable fuels, Iowans come together. It is this sense of community and collaboration that defines us as Iowans. And it should again shape our approach to governing this year. As we've demonstrated before, we should again attack our problems with the same common sense and seriousness as Iowans across the state, working hard, working together, and working to make things better than we found them. To me, this is the Iowa dream, the dream of opportunity and prosperity, which can become a reality for every Iowan that's willing to work for it. The seeds of that dream have been planted with our work over the past 3 years, but now we must cultivate that dream of opportunity, of a great job and a great place to raise a family so that it can grow and flourish. The simple truth is that we Iowans are a people of faith, of tenacity, who each year plant the seeds of our livelihood with a devout belief that with hard work and the grace of God, we will reap a bountiful harvest. Today, it is my duty and honor to report to you on the condition of our state. And I'm here to tell you with great pride, Iowa is working. With more Iowans going to work each and every day, the current unemployment rate in Iowa now stands at 4.4%. Iowa is working, and our citizens are working toward the Iowa dream. With personal incomes growing, Iowa is working. With schools and students improving their performance and their standing compared to other states around the nation, Iowa is working. The federal government has been paralyzed by partisanship, leading to cliffs, ceilings, sequesters, and shutdown. Iowa leaders have done the opposite. We came together to work on behalf of Iowans. We put aside political differences to achieve common sense compromise in cutting taxes, improving education, and modernizing our health care in the state. All evidence that Iowa is working. 3 years ago, like many other states, Iowa faced serious budget challenges. The path to prosperity was grim, yet the charge to us was clear. Restore predictability and stability to the state and get our fiscal house in order. Working together, we've done just that. We passed two biennial budgets that restored predictability to the state budget. These are budgets that hardworking Iowa taxpayers can depend on, budgets that work for Iowans by prioritizing education, economic development, and job training. Today, Iowa's Rainy Day Fund and Economic Emergency Funds are full, and we're fortunate to have a healthy budget surplus. Iowa is working. We've taken a similar common sense approach to health care in our state, by working to improve the health of Iowans, bringing more doctors to Iowa and providing better care for low-income Iowans. Since announcing the Healthiest State Initiative, Iowa has improved from 19th to 9th in well-being. During this address last year, students from Des Moines University joined us in seeking increased support for a public-private partnership that would encourage more doctors to move to rural Iowa. Today, the private sector, rural communities, and the state are coming together to ensure more doctors will be serving underserved communities. These students will benefit from this partnership, and our state will benefit from their commitment. As doctors, they'll work to improve the health of our citizens, and as valuable members of rural Iowa, their work will help bring jobs to our communities. Thank you, DMU students, for joining us again this year. Thank you very much. We're proud to have you here. I can tell you, this is a great group of students. I had the honor of working with them for 6 years. The Iowa Health and Wellness Plan is now in place. Thousands of Iowans are now receiving more than just access. They're getting health care designed to get them healthier. The Iowa Health and Wellness Plan is using health risk assessments and physicals to empower Iowans to take ownership of their own health. On top of that, more Iowans are receiving private insurance than ever before. Iowans living longer, healthier lives will improve the health of our state, our economy, and our families. We may not have always agreed on the path to these policies, but we can all resoundingly agree on this. Our plan was designed by Iowans, not out-of-touch bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., and it's going to make Iowans healthier. Iowa is working. Three years ago, 100,000 Iowans were out of work. Jobs were hard to come by, and investments in our state were inadequate. We focused on economic development efforts by changing our approach. Together, we created the Iowa Partnership for Economic Progress. This public-private partnership is reaping dividends for our economy with more investments and more jobs for Iowans. In the past 3 years, Iowa has seen $7.5 billion in new capital investments, and I'm pleased to report that since taking office, over 130,000 new jobs have been created in this state. Perhaps the best example of our state's turnaround in our policies working for middle-class families is seen in Lee County, which had the highest unemployment in the state when I took office in 2011. Iowans in Lee County are getting back to work, thanks in part to the largest onshore purchase of wind turbines in history and a multi-billion-dollar world-class fertilizer plant bringing much-needed jobs and investments to the area. Thanks to these projects, unemployment in Lee County has dropped by 40%, and many Southeast Iowans are back to work. To help Iowans keep more of their hard-earned money and to help employers invest and grow in Iowa, you passed, and I signed into law, the largest property tax cut in Iowa history. This historic measure will provide more than $4.4 billion in tax relief, slashing taxes for middle-class families and encouraging businesses to grow. Middle-class families are working hard every day to achieve their version of the Iowa dream, and providing this much-needed tax relief will help them to achieve it. Improving education in our state is imperative to improving our job outlook, our economic outlook, and our outlook for the Iowa dream itself. Together, we've taken steps to help keep our best teachers in the classrooms, increase school choice, and better equip our students for college and the workforce. We've begun to reform Iowa's education system, and we can expect Iowa schools to pull away from the middle of the pack and reclaim preeminence in student achievement as measured against the rest of the United States. Demands of both college and the workforce have changed. In the 21st century, the skills needed to succeed and compete in the globally competitive economy include science, technology, engineering, and math. Through STEM Advisory Council led by Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds and Vermeer CEO Marian Drenga, about 60,000 additional students are expected to have access to innovative STEM-focused opportunities this school year. Today, students across Iowa are learning to build robots and solve complex math problems, preparing them for the jobs of tomorrow. In the gallery are students from Des Moines East High School and Greenwood Elementary School. Please join me in welcoming them to their capital. We've worked together to invest in students, teachers, and schools. We've worked together and invested in health and the well-being of our state. We've worked together and invested in middle-class families, Main Street businesses, and our communities. I'm proud of what we've been able to do to accomplish working together. The results of our work will have a positive impact on the lives of many Iowans. However, there is still much more work to be done. Together, let's make this another successful and productive session. This year, let's continue to work to overcome the obstacles that stand in the way of our citizens as they seek the Iowa dream. Skyrocketing college costs have made reaching the Iowa dream unattainable for too many. Those who do pursue higher education often are strapped with massive amounts of student debt that they spend decades to pay off. We've taken steps to ease this burden. Last year, we provided historic financial support for our community colleges. We increased the Iowa tuition grant for those who attend private colleges, and we provided targeted support for high achievers entering the teaching profession and providing rural health care. And last year, the budget that you passed and I signed provided the Regents Universities with the necessary resources to freeze tuition for the first time in 30 years. This year, my budget proposes another investment in key tuition assistance programs so we can continue the fight against escalating student debt. This year, I'm submitting a budget to once again freeze tuition for Iowa students at the region's institutions. We need to reinforce with our students that if they borrow, they need to borrow only enough to pay the bills. The University of Northern Iowa is requiring all students receiving loans to participate in financial literacy programs, and it's working. Last year, student debt at the University of Northern Iowa decreased by 8%. Today, I'm calling on members of the Iowa Legislature to join me in working to reduce the costs to make college more affordable and reduce the amount of debt incurred by Iowa students and their families. What if more students could earn while they learn? Apprenticeships now allow just that opportunity by providing focused and streamlined training. One of the positive outgrowths of our historic capital investments made throughout the state is an increased demand for jobs. Apprenticeship programs allow us to quickly and effectively train workers to meet this demand. The budget I propose to you today triple support for apprenticeship programs. These programs strengthen our middle class, our businesses, and our economy. Today, we can further build the pipeline of skilled workers. Together, we can ensure our workers have the skills they need to fill the jobs that they want. But we must do more if Iowa is going to remain a national and global competitor. That means we need to be connected. Iowans are now interacting differently with businesses, with their government, and with each other. Through technology, we can connect our dreams to reality. Technology will improve educational instruction and make new resources available for our students. It can connect businesses to new customers and new markets. It can connect you with the job of your dreams. Technology connects the entrepreneur without a dime to the billion-dollar idea in her dreams. We've had great success in Iowa in the tech sector. We're now home to data centers with household names like Google, Microsoft, and Facebook. We have thriving tech startup communities in Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, and elsewhere, all with entrepreneurs looking to create the next Douala, Pinterest, or web filings. Cedar Falls has become a gigabit city, and three other Iowa communities have distinguished themselves as connected communities. Yet as a state, we can do better. In September, I announced our initiative to connect every Iowan with the goal of making Iowa the most connected state in the Midwest. I charged the STEM Advisory Council's Broadband Committee with developing recommendations for our consideration. Today, I propose the Connect Every Iowan Act with incentives to encourage access, adoption, and use of broadband technology by business and individuals. My plan includes programs that will train workers for 21st century careers in information and communications technology. My plan also calls for moving to ICN 2.0, repurposing the Iowa Communications Network so that it can partner with the private sector to provide connectivity in underserved areas of our state. Together, we can use broadband technology to grow the Iowa dream throughout our state, especially in rural areas. As our connection speeds increase, so does the pace of economic progress, so does the ability to grow jobs, and so does the ability to turn the Iowa dream into a reality. To keep the Iowa dream alive, we must keep Iowa, and especially rural Iowa, vibrant and working. As I visit communities all throughout our state during my annual 99-county tour, this vibrancy is seen, felt, and heard. From the enjoyment experienced at Watermelon Day in Stanhope, the Bell Tower Festival in Jefferson, and the Swamp Fox Festival in Marion, to early morning farmers markets, and the Rotary Clubs at noon, day-to-day life reflects our shared Iowa values. Yet, some of the schools and public buildings which used to be a source of pride are now empty shells, dotting the landscapes of our communities. Once filled with the hustle and bustle of school children and their teachers, these are more than just abandoned buildings. They're part of our childhood. They're part of us. Instead of letting these treasures stand there empty, let's turn them into economic centers of our communities. Let's once again make them part of our daily lives. We will submit legislation to provide tax incentives to repurpose abandoned schools and public buildings. Let's turn what used to be our centers of education into centers of commerce. Let's repurpose the crumbling structures with renewed investment and reinforce the foundation with new jobs. As we repurpose our schools of yesterday, let's also refocus on our students of today. Sadly, for some children in Iowa, the bully they face every day makes every day feel more like a nightmare. As they consider whether they can continue to take the abuse from the bully, they don't know where to turn. Even if they turn to school officials, our laws have tied their hands. Imagine being that child. Imagine being unable to escape as the bully relentlessly pursues them online in a form accessible 24/7. Imagine how bleak it must be. Imagine how lonely it must feel. This session, we can let our children know that they are not alone. I call on both houses and both parties to support the Bully Free Iowa Act of 2014. We can take action to empower our students and their parents. We can untie the hands of schools to allow them to better address cyberbullying. As we take action to protect our children from bullies, let us also commit to honoring and better serving the men and women that protect our liberties and our rights every day. This session, the centerpiece of my agenda, is Home Base Iowa. It is a bipartisan jobs plan focusing on recruiting service members to Iowa and matching them with good, high-paying careers. Here today in the gallery, we are joined by members of the Iowa National Guard and veterans organizations. They've served our country and our state with dignity and honor. Please join me in thanking them for their service. Theodore Roosevelt once said, "A man who's good enough to shed his blood for his country is good enough to be given a square deal afterwards." In November, I announced the Home Base Iowa initiative to recruit veterans to Iowa because I believe Iowa can offer our nation's veterans something greater than a square deal. We can offer them a better opportunity to live the Iowa dream. We can give them the best life America has to offer. Joining me in this endeavor are two men who have served their country, two men who share my uncompromising passion for honoring veterans. Please join me in recognizing co-chairs of Home Base Iowa, Congressman Leonard Boswell and Bob Myers, CEO of Casey's General Store. Thank you both for your continued service. We want our veterans to know that in Iowa, if you dream it, you can achieve it. In Iowa, you can find a home that you can afford. In Iowa, you can find a good paying job. In Iowa, you can send your kids to a good school and they can play in a safe neighborhood. And in Iowa, we honor our veterans, not only with words and ceremonies, but with action. Today, I call on the legislature to pass the Home Base Iowa Act. Join me in telling veterans that we will no longer tax their military pensions. Let's increase support for the Military Homeowners Assistance Program that provides up to $5,000 in down payment or closing cost assistance. Let's give veterans credit for their military training and experience as they pursue occupational licensure in our state. And let's make Iowa the destination for veterans to continue their education. Already, the University of Iowa has been named the sixth best university for veterans by U.S. News & World Report. But we can do even better. I will be asking the State Board of Education to join the Regents institutions by passing rules giving veterans, their spouses, and dependents automatic in-state tuition at our community colleges. I will also be convening stakeholders. I will also be convening stakeholders from the Regents, community colleges, and private colleges to develop consistent policies to provide veterans academic credit for their military training and experience. Our veterans have risked their lives defending our freedom. To show our gratitude, let's make Iowa the leader in respect, support, and opportunity for veterans. Ladies and gentlemen, Iowa is working. Our state is open for new ideas, open for honest dialogue, and open for more business. Iowa is working. Our efforts are making a difference in the lives of everyday families as they pursue their Iowa dreams. Our schools are getting better. Our communities are coming together, and our government is working. But that success tells me that we have an even greater opportunity, an opportunity to build upon what is great about our state and our people, so that we are competitive now and in the future. With those significant accomplishments passed, the opportunity to do even more is at hand. Iowa is working. The Iowa dream is here to be realized, but I believe we can and we must dream even bigger. As we look to the future, our path is not dictated. We have opportunities not seen in other states and other parts of the world. We need to be true to our constituents and ourselves, and we must dream big. We must dream of an Iowa that is competitive with any other place in the world, an Iowa where it is easier to build a business, to build your ideas, to support a family. We must dream of an Iowa where a world-class education is not a dream but a reality for every Iowa child. An Iowa that embraces the simple goal that every child should be ready to compete in the 21st century marketplace. We must dream of an Iowa that continually asks the question, how can government better serve people? An Iowa that uses technology for greater transparency and accountability for taxpayers. Now is the time. Now is not the time to shy away from challenges and opportunities. Now is the time to embrace them, to be bold, to move Iowa forward, and to increase competitiveness of our state and its people today and for the years to come. Iowa is working. But there is more work to be done to realize the Iowa dream. Let's show everyone that we are up to the challenge. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless the people of Iowa.
You've been listening to Governor Terry Branstad deliver his annual Condition of the State Address. This is Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. And now we want to hear from you. What are your responses to the governor's speech today? What did you hear that you liked? What did you wish that you had heard? You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And now to help us with analysis of the governor's speech, with me is Iowa Public Radio's Clay Masters. Hello, Clay.
Hey, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you.
And Chris Larimer is also here, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today.
Sure, thank you for having me.
And Clay, I want to start with you. The overall theme of the speech, Iowa is working. What were some of the things that stood out for you that really got the biggest applause, the most bipartisan applause in the gallery today?
Well, he spent a lot of time talking about all the accomplishments of the 2013 bipartisan legislative compromises, property tax reform, the Medicaid alternative known as the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan. That was the alternative that the legislature passed to provide insurance for low-income Iowans, and talked as well about education reform from last year. Then he talked about that was really what he spent most of his time talking about, and got some standing ovations early on for talking about Iowa saving wrestling, as he put it and likes to talk about, and talking about how he can use that momentum to save wrestling to then turn around and try to save the renewable fuel standard, which is how much ethanol is blended into gasoline. The EPA has reduced the amount of ethanol that will be blended in gasoline, and there's a lot of politicians here in Iowa who are opposed to that. And certainly, yes, Iowa is working was the theme out of that. Hopefully anybody wasn't playing a drinking game this early in the morning for that.
Well, and I'm not quite sure what the connection between wrestling and the renewable fuel standard is. But Chris, how much power do you think Iowans and Governor Branstad have in influencing policy on the renewable fuel standard? This is very high-stakes stuff for many people in Iowa.
It is very high stakes, but Governor Branstad did allude to the fact that a lot of this is going to depend on the congressional delegation from Iowa. This is in large part a federal policy, and so I think he's laying the groundwork there that if there can be support in Iowa, you can sort of move up the government ladder in terms of showing support for it, like with Olympics. But I think ultimately this is going to be a federal issue, and this is going to be something that's going to require a lot of push and influence from Iowa's congressional delegation.
And what are the political forces at work on that issue?
Well, I think there are a number of interest groups, whether you're talking about the oil industry, coal industry, industries that have been around and are very well established that have a lot of money and, frankly, are able to donate a lot of money to political campaigns. And so there is a lot of political potential for a lot of political influence there. And so it's going to be a battle. It's going to be, I think, take some time to resolve.
Well, and of course, as I mentioned, this is an issue that a lot of people in Iowa care a lot about. Do you think that this is an issue that Governor Branstad will take the blame for if ethanol suffers under his watch?
No, I don't think so necessarily. He laid it out in his condition of the state address that Iowa needs to be working, but he also said that this is in part the responsibility of Iowa's congressional delegation. This is in part the responsibility of the federal government, so the state can only do so much. At least I think that was the message he was trying to convey with his address today.
All right. Well, and Clay, one of the themes that came up again today and has come up ever since Governor Branstad took office again are jobs. He's talked a lot about he made a promise to create 200,000 jobs. He claims to have created about 130,000 jobs. That was certainly something that he wanted to highlight in today's speech.
Yeah, and he talked about that a lot and even mentioned kind of a controversial job creator in Lee County, where he said people are getting back to work because of a world-class fertilizer plant bringing much-needed jobs and investment to the area. I saw a lot of I was monitoring Twitter and saw a lot of Democratic lawmakers and people that were saying these are just temporary jobs, and there's questions of whether or not it's really adding strong jobs to the area or just temporary construction jobs. And then he also was talking about some of the large wind energy jobs that are being created because of deals that were reached to bring wind energy investment into the state as well.
Well, and Chris, there is some controversy surrounding numbers of mm-hmm. jobs. There has been over the last few years. How does that 130,000 hold up to you?
Well, I think if I heard it correctly, he said 130,000 new jobs. And I think that sort of moves him away from some of the controversy there, because there was a whether or not you're talking about sort of the number of jobs added minus the number of jobs lost. He emphasized the number of new jobs that have been added in the last 3 years.
All right. And we do want to hear from people. We want to hear from you about what you heard in the speech that you liked today, what you didn't hear that you wanted to hear. And the number to call to join our conversation is 866-780-9100. Randy is on the line in Iowa County. Hi, Randy.
Must be a politician out there, the way the wind's blowing today.
All right. What were you hoping to hear that you didn't hear, Randy?
I heard absolutely nothing about conservation. There's been a lot of CRP pulled out of CRP and put to row crop in the last couple of years, and a lot of erosion there. And also I heard absolutely nothing about how to fix all these roads and bridges in the state.
All right. So you were hoping to hear about conservation. You were hoping to hear about infrastructure. And no, we didn't hear about either of those two issues today, Clay.
Yeah, I did think it was interesting when that was going on. I was waiting to hear something about crumbling roads and bridges. But there was a conversation or part of his speech that talked about some abandoned schools and repurposing abandoned schools and public buildings. There was no mention of the gas tax, which Governor Branstad has been supportive of. He refers to it as a user fee, and that people that aren't driving cars aren't paying that tax. I guess I'm not too surprised that I didn't hear him bring that up, because it's probably not as popular to talk about in an election year where he likely will be running for re-election. But yeah, I was waiting to hear about the roads and bridges, since it's something that repeatedly comes up in the beginning parts of the legislative session.
Well, and Chris, there is a surplus for government revenue in mm-hmm. Iowa this year. There are a lot of people talking about where that money is going to go. We're expecting another revenue increase in the near future. Infrastructure is a place that I know a lot of people would like to see the money spent.
It is, but it's also, as Clay sort of alluded to, a very controversial issue. And if you think about the governor's speech, you know, as Clay said, you know, the first half, I think about the first 18 minutes, were focused on a very positive theme, the accomplishments from the last session. But the last 18 minutes, we're laying out six proposals. And I think, you know, the research on governors shows that those governors who are very popular, have high approval ratings, are the ones who have a very focused agenda and are able to get those things done. As far as the six proposals that Governor Branstad laid out today, you know, they're fairly non-controversial. I would imagine they'll elicit bipartisan support. So I can imagine the governor going 6-0 on those proposals. The infrastructure one would have been a very difficult one to push through, because you are talking about a tax increase during an election year.
Well, and you have been researching governors around mm-hmm. the United States. When you mm-hmm. compare Governor Branstad to other governors and other states' governmental structures, is he a powerful governor?
Yes, he is. I mean, you know, at the very first part of it is that there are no term limits. So Governor Branstad can be in office for as long as he wants. And he certainly has been in office for a significant amount of time, more so than other governors. And if he would be reelected, of course, we all know that he would go on to be the America's longest serving governor in history. But he does have power. You know, he has the line item veto. He has you have a professional legislature, but he also has a split legislature. And that gives him that much more power, because the legislature itself is sort of forced to compromise, and Governor Branstad can take a step back from that. Governor is the lead actor when it comes to the budget. So Governor Branstad does have power. You have a legislature that is time-bound as far as getting this budget done. They're bound by legal obligations as far as how much they can spend. And so they're complicated, all of this, by the fact that you have a very popular governor. When you have a very popular governor and a divided legislature like this, you see high approval ratings for the governor, and he has a lot to fall back on in terms of his policies. He's had policy success in 2013. And so, you know, at this point, his power is quite high relative to other governors.
Well, and you mentioned time constraints for getting things accomplished. And Clay, listening to you hosted River to River from the legislature yesterday, and listening to your program yesterday, it sounds like there are even more time constraints than usual. This is a session that is going to adjourn on time because of elections.
Yeah, that's right. And the programs or the acts that the governor has brought up, like Chris was saying, They're very non-controversial. He was talking about the centerpiece of his legislation this year is going to be the Home Base Iowa Act. He's been talking about this for a few months now. It's, as he puts it, would fully exempt military pensions from state income tax, putting Iowa on a more equal footing with other states. And he's calling on the State Board of Education for a policy granting automatic in-state tuition to veterans, their spouses, and their dependents at Iowa's community colleges. He also highlighted stuff on the Connect Every Iowan Act, which is meant to bring more broadband, high-speed internet to more rural locations in the state, and then also a anti-bullying legislation, which was talked about a lot last year when we were going over education reform. But what finally got passed had a lot to do with teacher programs and models. So those are the three that I really noted were the big ones that I could see moving through because of how non-controversial they are.
Well, and I want to dig into education here, and so does Dave, who's on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Dave.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I heard a lot of talk about privatizing and not much about the Commonwealth and how to fund our students. A lot of giveaways there to private colleges and no way to fund our public education, and that's worrying. I mean, we just gave $300 million away to that fertilizer plant, that Egyptian fertilizer plant, and we seem to be giving away the barn here and not taking into account that a strong Iowa really means educating our youth and not charter schools, because they seem to either fail or succeed kind of at random, and the only sure way is public education. And okay, it really scares me. It really scares me.
Well, Dave, thanks a lot for your comments, and let's talk about that, because Governor Branstad did talk about education in the speech today, and he echoed many of the things that Dave was just saying about the need for a strong public education system. However, we have seen school increases frozen over the last few years. Last year, many school districts complained that the decisions on school funding didn't come until too late for schools to actually make decisions for how to do business in the coming year. Chris?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. That was something we heard Senator Gronstall talking about this week, as far as K-12 funding and the timing of when those funding numbers would be released. That none of that was mentioned in the address today. The Governor Branstad did talk about freezing tuition again and providing money to Iowa's public universities to allow them to freeze tuition again this year. And I think, you know, of those six proposals, that may be the one that takes a little bit more time to push through as far as giving the necessary amount of money for the Iowa's public universities to do that. But there was no mention of K-12 funding.
Right. And again, I mentioned earlier the fact that there could be some money available this year, but he didn't talk about increasing that funding that has been fairly stagnant.
Right. And there's been some talk that that may still come through. It's just a matter of figuring out from those big three proposals that were pushed through last year as far as education, healthcare, and the property taxes, that there may be some costs or unforeseen costs that are going to come up this year that they need to work those out first before they can talk about the increase, the allowable growth funding for K-12 education.
Well, and to talk about higher education again, the governor did say he's submitting a budget that would allow the regents to freeze tuition again.
Right.
How can we account for that as well? Has there been any proposal to backfill with state funding to replace tuition dollars that would be lost by no increase?
I haven't seen anything yet. I think this is one of those things we'll just have to wait to actually read the budget to see where that money's coming from and how much is there.
All right, let's get back to the phones, and you're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Craig is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Craig.
Hi. Governor Branstad would still be talking if he covered everything that everybody wanted him to cover. One thing that he didn't cover was what our former governor, now Secretary of Agriculture, said, and that was that he hopes that biofuels will be made through the process of switchgrass instead of corn, helping to control the impact upon the environment. And I think there's a real balance because of the cost of food that's made from corn now is a lot more expensive. And so we have to have a balance in this whole thing, working together, like he kept emphasizing. We could do great things in this state, but we're still quite partisan, even in our talking on radio. And, you know, it's too bad.
All right, Craig, thank you so much for bringing that up. And we were talking about the renewable fuel standard, Chris, and that's mm-hmm. that's another one of the issues at play, is a movement away from ethanol to other alternative fuels.
Yes, it is. But I think, you know, with the renewable fuel standard, if we think about it in terms of politics, you know, this is something that Democrats and Republicans in the state are united behind. Thinking about Craig's comments, there wasn't any mention of the farm bill as far as getting Iowans together and putting pressure on the congressional delegation to move through a farm bill. I think in part because the politics on that are less bipartisan than on something like the renewable fuel standard.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about bipartisanship, because that was something, again, Clay, that came up yesterday in your conversation with legislators, with the session leading up to an election year. They will adjourn on time. There's not going to be a lot of time. A lot of people who are facing election will want to steer clear of very controversial things. What is the outlook for this legislative session and the governor's role in that?
Well, I feel like all of us that are reporting on this are starting to sound like a broken record, but if there's no consensus met early on subject matters, there probably won't be anything passed on it. So I think the budget's going to be a real big topic here, and I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of changes. And what the governor has laid out with being fairly bipartisan issues, with the anti-bullying legislation, the Connect Every Iowa Act, and the Home Base Iowa, bringing veterans from out of state into the state. Those are really going to be, if he can control the conversations to talk about those, I think, you know, with the addition to the budget, those are going to be the real big issues that get talked about early on. And then I think there will be a lot of conversation about bills that will likely go nowhere.
Well, and I want to return to broadband connectivity. That's something that we do seem to see bipartisan support for. And I know that in the past we have talked about the ICN and upgrading that, and there was an effort to find a private investor who would do that, and that fell through. Are there concrete plans for that program that does seem to have some bipartisan support, Clay?
I haven't seen anything. I was unable to make it to the budget meeting this morning because I was on the air. But once I have time to comb through that, I think there might be something in there to talk about it. But as of right now, I've just kind of heard what the governor has talked about in laying out the broadband Connect Every Iowan Act.
All right. Bobby is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Bobby.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I didn't, as I told your screener, I did not hear anything about the needs of the poor in our communities. The whole issue of low-income housing, there is basically none available. So if he's going to do something with old buildings, schools, public sector buildings, to convert those into low-income housing looks to me like it could be a solution. The crying need for more mental health workers and beds and that sort of thing, when a crisis line is sometimes the person's only access to someone who can talk to them and help them through a really rough spot. So those are things that I was hoping to hear but didn't hear.
Bobby, thank you so much for calling. And Chris, we didn't hear those things. We heard just a tiny bit about health care in mm-hmm. Iowa, a brief section on the Healthiest State Initiative. What did you make of that?
Well, I think it just goes back to the theme of the address, which was, you know, half of it talking about very positive things we've been doing, and the other half focused on very specific items that are going to elicit bipartisan support and have a real chance of being signed into law. And I think, you know, anything that had any sort of political aspect to it or any chance of being somewhat controversial was simply just the reality of it being an election year and a gubernatorial election year.
In this speech, there were a couple of themes that were hit very hard. Iowa Works is one of them. Of course, the Iowa Dream was another phrase that came back again and again. And in many ways, to me, it sounded a little like a campaign speech. Was this the kickoff of the gubernatorial campaign?
Well, I think certainly the first part, you know, the governor certainly feels he has a lot to potentially take credit for, not only in terms of the three major reforms that were enacted last year, but there are a lot of positive economic indicators for the state as far as the unemployment rate, you know, being over 2 percentage points lower than the national unemployment rate, balanced budget. He did talk about biennial budget, defending that a bit, because states generally have been moving away from biennial budgets. He mentioned that was continues to provide, I guess, as he put it, predictability and stability in the and getting the fiscal house in order. So I think part of this is just what a governor can do. They have the pulpit, just like the president has the bully pulpit. Governors can take use the condition of the state address to take credit for a lot of things, and the governor was certainly able to do that today.
Well, and do you think that we will hear echoes of these themes as the campaign gets underway?
Absolutely. I would be surprised if we didn't. I mean, I'm guessing in a few months we can look back, you know, after the first few minutes of the speech, that those minutes from about 4 to 18 minutes into the speech, those are probably going to be the themes throughout the campaign.
Now, we've established,
assuming he runs.
Right. We've established that nothing that's overly controversial is going to make it through the legislature this year. Mm-hmm. What are you going to keep your eye on this year, though, Chris? What are you most interested in?
Well, I think, you know, certainly the higher education funding is something that's of interest, but also some of these proposals that he talked about as far as, and Clay mentioned as well, and I agree, the Connect Every Iowa and the bullying and the home-based Iowa. I think it will be interesting how he deals with arguments about how to use the surplus, and or at least how to use funds if both of the economic emergency fund and the rainy day fund are both full. What proposals are there going to be that he did not mention today to use some of that money to maybe help out middle-class Iowans?
Chris, thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Chris Larimer is Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. And, of course, Clay, you will be watching the legislature very closely and hosting River to River on Mondays throughout the legislative session. What do you have your eye on this legislative session?
Well, I'm really going to be, again, like Chris was saying, keeping an eye on these big three issues that the governor has talked about. But there are, as both House Majority Leader Linda Upmeyer, a Republican from Clear Lake, and Senate Democratic Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl of Council Bluffs laid out yesterday during River to River, there are a lot of different issues that each of them have as priorities, and we'll be interested to see if they can not clash on them. So there will be plenty of stuff to report on, even though not a lot's going to get through.
Well, we'll be listening. Clay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Charity.
Iowa Public Radio's Clay Masters. He is Morning Edition host and, of course, also State House reporter, and we'll be bringing you the latest throughout the legislative session. Tomorrow, Talk of Iowa will be back on the air, and I'll have wildlife biologist Jim Pease on the air. We'll talk about keeping track of changes in our environment throughout the year and for many years, what we can learn from those changes. That's coming up on Talk of Iowa tomorrow. Today, we had help from Tony Daner in Cedar Falls. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.